In the early history of our country, the state of Virginia was known as the Mother of Presidents. That was because of the fact that during the first 40 years of our history, Virginia furnished the presidents during 32 years of that time. In our own area, I believe Brigham Young University may be called the Mother of College Presidents. At this moment, if my memory serves me correctly, the president of Ricks College in Idaho, the president of the Utah State Agricultural College, the president of Weber College, the president of the University of Utah, the president of Snow College, are all members of the BYU Alumni Association. And I think two past presidents of Dixie College and one past president of the Agricultural Branch College at Cedar City are in the same category. This list is probably not complete. We're honored today with one of these college presidents that I've been talking about. But to us, he's more than a president of a neighboring institution. For a quarter of a century, 24 years to be exact, he was president of Brigham Young University. Most of you students did not meet him because you've entered since that time. And even some of our faculty are unacquainted with him. But we old-timers, I haven't gotten permission from all the faculty members to address them that way, but nonetheless, I'm going to do so. We old-timers remember him very well. It was during his administration that most of the buildings on this upper campus were built. The Grant Library, the Brimhall Building, this Joseph Smith Building, the stadium. We knew him as a fine scholar, an able administrator, a man who was widely traveled, who had served foreign countries as a consultant in expert capacity. And we learned to respect and admire him for the work which he has did, which he had done. Therefore, today, we are very glad to welcome him back home to the grand old school, President Franklin S. Harris of Utah State Agricultural College.
President Jensen, faculty members, and other B-Wisers, I would be very callous indeed if I were not filled with very deep emotion this morning as I return to these sacred halls. It's a great pleasure to be here in this room, which I consider to be the best college auditorium that I have ever seen. And I've seen most of the educational institutions of the world. 46 years ago, I came 1,000 miles to enter this institution as a freshman. And from that day to this, I have seen no reason for not believing this to be one of the outstanding educational institutions of the world. There was a time when I could call practically every student of the institution by his first name, and some of them called me by my first name, even though I was their senior in rank. And now when I see the thousands swarming over this campus and realize the area from which you all come, I realize something of the growth that has taken place in this institution since its founding, and since my mother was one of the original students of the institution when it was founded, and my father was one of the early students. In fact, this institution is very much of a tradition in our household. So much so, even 30 years ago, when we were thinking of coming here again, our little son Chauncey was in the first grade in Logan, and the teachers got him in the corner one night after school and said, "Well, Chauncey, you're going to go down to Provo, are you? To BY? What are you going to do down there?" He said, "Well, I guess I'm going to meet my future wife." My father met my mother there, and my grandfather met my grandmother there, and I guess that's what I'm going to do. And he did, and all of our six children did the same thing. So how could the BYU help but be a fundamental tradition in the Harris household? Of course, if I should start reminiscing about these faculty members, I would have a very long and pleasant task. I see among the faculty members many who I saw come here as freshmen and graduate with distinction and go on to other studies and then come back to serve the alma mater. I see some here who were on the faculty when I came as a freshman, and they look about as young now as they did then. And some are about as youthful and have kept their youth during all these years. I'd like to spend all the time reminiscing. It's so pleasant. The association here is so pleasant. But I have a little message I would like to bring to you. It's not going to be in the nature of a direct preachment. I want to have a bit of symbolism in it to help you remember the two or three points that I have in mind talking to you about. I want to talk to you about the journey of life, and particularly the way in which your college life may assist you in that journey. Now, since we're going on a journey, we might bring in some of the symbols of travel. Having done a bit of going around myself, I think in terms of journeys and trips. And so I want you this morning to think of your journey through life. Of course, if there were time, we might make it a journey through eternity. There's no more challenging theme when you get to thinking about religion and the eternal verities than thinking about the journey through eternity. The time before we came here, the time while we're here, and the time hereafter. However, I shall direct your time more to the period while we're here, the journey of life, physical life. journeys these days are taken on wheels. And so I'm going to use the wheel as the symbol or the sort of the carrier wave on which for you to attach these little things I'm going to talk about. 3 years ago now, I was over in the place where it was thought the first wheel was ever used by mankind. It's over in the upper reaches of the Euphrates River, in the area known as the Jezira. That branch of the Euphrates River called the Khabur that runs off north into the Turkey Highlands. There is now a little town known as Hashishi. And right in that vicinity, mankind is supposed to have utilized the principle of the wheel for the first time. We're inclined to think of the wheel as something that always was used. But after all, everything had to have a beginning. All devices had to be developed. And the wheel is one of these devices that man has used. Now, it may be used in many types of ways. In China, I have seen great hordes of people going away from war. When I have been going through a war zone, I have seen a man with a wheelbarrow able to transport many times as much as his neighbors were able to transport by using only the back. This single wheel with the rods connecting it enabled him to do much more than he could do without it. In India, I have seen populations move out of famine zones. Great wheel carts drawn by camels or donkeys or oxen, conveying on the two wheels of a cart the possessions that they could not think of taking without these two wheels. And to get to more modern wheels, I remember as a little boy in Mexico, our school let out and we went some distance to see the first bicycle that ever came to that area. And that was a marvelous thing, a perfected wheel. And of course, in later days, we have had the developments of the better wheels that enable us to go great distances in much shorter time. When I first entered the BYU, there was not an automobile in Provo. I don't believe there'd ever been one here. I remember on the way here in El Paso, Texas, there was a boy going along with us, and along San Antonio Street, there came along the first automobile that any of us had seen. And this man was a little more vocal, Knute Brainhold. He says, "Look, look, 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 look." He saw it first, and then we didn't know just what it was. Well, it was a wagon going without any horses. Now, of course, the improvement of wheels, the wheels of industry, the wheels of transportation, the wheels of scientific instruments have made of the world an entirely different thing than it was half a century ago. So the wheel is a tremendously important thing. Now for you, I want to think of a wheel with five spokes that will help to transport you through the journey of life. Of course, you might have the one wheel, or you might have three wheels, or four wheels, or more wheels. And each one of them might have spokes in, and each one of those could be used in somewhat the same way that I want to think of the one wheel today. The one wheel with five spokes. I do all this preliminary because I want you to remember what I have to say, because I think it is important. These five spokes that I mentioned for your wheel to help convey you through the journey of life. One, we will call earning. The second, we will call loving. The third, we'll call thinking. The fourth, we'll designate appreciating. And the fifth, we'll call worship. Now, if you can think of those five things with all their connotations, there would be no reason for my saying any more. However, since I have come this 150 miles this morning with my wife, we had a very pleasant journey, and since I am here, and since you're here, we'll just have to spend the time somehow, because I think it's going to be half an hour or so before President Jensen is going to be taking us to lunch, and maybe before your land ladies will have your lunch ready. So let's all of us just spend the time thinking about these five spokes of one of the wheels that will help to convey you properly and effectively through the journey of life. This first one we call, that I mentioned, as earning. By that I mean this process of somehow accumulating the physical things of the world that enable you to eat and be clothed and be housed and be able to support a family and be able to do the things that are necessary to be done by an efficient college graduate. Because you who have come to this great institution can never again be judged by the same terms that others who have not had this opportunity can be judged. It is expected that you will have a higher standard of living, that you will have more necessities, more comforts, more luxuries, than if you had not attained the richness of living that goes with a college education. So you're going to be expected to earn more than if you hadn't come here. And the chances are you will earn more. Of course, we can't say that every one of you will earn more than if you had stayed at home and homesteaded some land, and the land had increased in value, and you've been able to sell that land for a lot of money. Maybe you might have had more money by doing that. But the great majority of you, the great number of you, are going to be able to earn much more because of the fact that you have prepared yourselves for this phase of living and of the journey of life. It's your duty, your positive duty, to learn all of the things that you can learn that will assist you in earning a better living and preparing yourself to support your family in the best possible way. Now, it's a little like carrying coals to Newcastle to tell college students who are studying agronomy and horticulture and education and commerce and all these other things that people by which people earn a living, telling them very much about the matter of earning livings. Many of you, I'm sure, have come here primarily to fit yourself into some profession, law or medicine or horticulture or engineering or some particular thing, so that you've been thinking about these things. And it's right that you do think about them, and that you learn not only the technical things about your profession, but also learn something about handling money and about being frugal and about having good credit. Not just the skill of work, but the skill of managing and the skill of getting. I happen to be a vice president of one of the banks in Provo. And as I meet each month in the directors' meeting, I hear the credit rating of the people of this community. And I have an opportunity to know how tremendously important it is for a person to be known to be a good risk for a loan and to have the good repute of his fellows in financial transactions, and to deal fairly and squarely with his fellows. That, I would say, is the foundation of all matters financial. The matter of having character and having knowledge of handling practical affairs in a way that will show you to be honest and upright and fair and square. Now, along with that comes, of course, the skill and the training that goes with having mastery in a field. I think during my 29 years as a university and college president, I've had something to do with the employment of something like 1,000 persons. And always, we take into consideration in the compensation and the other things, the fundamental qualities of training and things that you're getting along to amplify your character here. And I'm not going to go any further into this general field except to say, while you're here, learn all you can about money matters and about making your services valuable so that you'll be able to support your family in the proper method and be able to get for yourselves and your family the things you need and be able to contribute to the general welfare of the community. So much for spoke number one. Spoke number two I mentioned as loving. Now, I don't need to say too much about that at BYU, I think. My first trip up this hill years ago, before there were any buildings up here at all, before the university owned any of the land up here, was coming up the pathway. It was just a path in those days, sort of a cow trail up the hill. There were lots, even at that time, lots of big trees and places on the trees where people could sit. And I noticed even then that the young folks thought that it was safer to sit close together Then you'd be less likely to fall out of the tree than if you sat far apart. And I've had a hand in making some of the lovers' lanes and pleasant walks and secluded places for people to go, because I believe in that sort of thing. I think that of all of the activities of life, of all of them, there's not one that's more important than the loving one. The loving. Loving in the best way. Now that means the love between a boy and a girl. A man and a woman. Now in that, in these college days when people just naturally think about these things, there are a few things to be kept in mind. One is that while you have a little practice along the way, when it comes to the final love matchmaking, you have there something that is tremendously important. I cannot too strongly emphasize the fact that if he and she are properly mated by temperament, by intellect, by taste, and by background, things can go along so much more smoothly than they can otherwise. In dealing with the tens of thousands of college students that I have had the privilege of dealing with during my academic career, I have learned a good deal. Your predecessors, hundreds of them, came to me with their difficulties, if they had difficulties, and with their joys, if they had joys. Hundreds of people have said to me, we owe you a great debt of gratitude because you are the means of having us come together. I can tell a lot of stories on those things if I had time. But it is a satisfaction to see that the right he and the right she get together and develop in a proper way. In these troublous times in the world, I'm sure you're all aware that one couple out of every three or four have trouble. Of the graduates of BYU, I would say it takes at least 20 times as many matches to have one case of trouble as it would with the ordinary people in Los Angeles and other cities where these things seem to prevail more. Among the graduates of BYU who have met their spouses here, we have tremendously good success in finding good matching and happiness. But I want to tell you that while there's a good deal of gaiety and all that going with matchmaking, necessarily so, there's also some very serious thought. And quite a lot of praying ought to go with it. I don't know of anything that should be prayed about any more than this lovemaking, because my way of thinking about prayer is that its efficacy comes to us through inspiring us. That is, the powers above, the powers that we pray to, certainly have a better opportunity to inspire us and help us that way than any way that I know of. And in this one thing that we need, certainly we call for inspiration. So much for spoke two. Spoke three, I labeled thinking. Because when you get these primary fundamental necessities cared for, the eating and drinking and shelter, and they get the family ties arranged, certainly when you get to that point, there's no other more important thing that you can consider than that old-fashioned idea spoken of as thinking. You want to try it sometime. Some people go through life without much of it. They're guided largely by emotions and by events that just transpire. But I believe we can say the highest fruit of a human being, the highest function that he can attain to, is the ability to think and think straight. It's tremendously more important than the learning of mere facts. Facts, important as they are, change. When I entered college, I could tell you that I had never ridden in an automobile and seen but very few. I had never seen a moving picture show. Very few people had ever telephoned. That is, telephones were known long before, but I hadn't talked over many of them. And the things that we engage in, the phonographs, I had barely heard a phonograph by paying 10 cents and having a tube put in the ears and a disc phonograph running along. So such thing as radio had never been thought of. Radium was not known. And we can say all of the things that are most important in our lives today were not known when I entered college. Now, if I just learned a few facts and had not been able to think somewhat and adjust to changing conditions, I certainly would have missed the boat. So that I emphasize most strongly in your schoolwork to learn to think and think in a sound sort of way on a basis of facts and so on, so that you'll have a life that will be one of the high standard of human achievement. Now, I see my time is racing along, and I must get to these others. The fourth spoke that I want to mention is appreciating. The ability to appreciate. What wouldn't a person who is unlettered be able to afford to give? To be able to appreciate literature such as Dr. Christensen down here can appreciate it. Some people go through life without a knowledge of the heritage of all the past ages, what has been written. And to be able to distinguish between trash and the real thing. To be able to tell what is good in music from what is poor, to be able to appreciate the beauties of nature and understand them, to know these sunsets on these mountains, to know the beauties of these Persian rugs on these hillsides, to know about people of other lands, to know your fellows who are here in the institution from Persia and from China, and from other countries from which they come, to know all peoples, to appreciate them, to have an extensive understanding of the things that one can understand and appreciate, that is indeed something to be striven for in college. And college is the best place that I know of for you to develop these appreciations. There's likely to be, on the part of people who are off, were brought up, say, on the farm or in the counting house, with just the surroundings they have, a very limited appreciation. College opens the door to the wide appreciation. Now, my last spoke is that of worship. And I leave it to the last because, after all, it's the most frequently misunderstood and neglected. And at the same time, one of the most important for happiness, for well-being, and for service. The man who goes through life without the experience of worship, who does not pray, who does not express himself in matters of worship, who does not look to higher values than just the physical things of the world, certainly misses the greatest opportunity in life. In science, we're finding more and more that there are things above and beyond the things we can see. There was a time when it was fashionable to read a 13 or 14 weeks course in chemistry and think you knew all of chemistry. The old Steel series, I think it was 16 weeks in chemistry, 16 weeks in geology, and so on. You'd read that little text through and think you knew everything there was in the world and the universe, everything about man and God. We're now finding, by our more refined methods, that there are things way on beyond. I've had the opportunity to raise the money to buy some tremendously delicate instruments for studying the universe recently. And the things that instruments of that kind are able to detect bring to us knowledge of such things as physics and chemistry and biology that are way beyond the conception of the limited scientist a period ago. And they're leading to things of spirituality and things beyond the physical. Now, I haven't time to develop this theme. I'll have to dogmatize somewhat. But I can tell you that the greatest men I know, the greatest scientists, the greatest scholars, the greatest kings, the greatest statesmen, the greatest historians, the greatest literary people, in fact, the greatest people in all lines that I know are men and women of humility and faith. I know a few atheists. I know quite a lot of non-believers. But as a rule, they're the small fry. They're the fellows in between. They're the ones that have a little learning and think they know it all. But the great people of my acquaintance are people of faith and humility and understanding and appreciation. And that includes appreciation of spiritual things. Now, think of these five wheels to help you through the journey of life. Earning, loving, thinking, appreciating, and worshiping. And use all those spokes to strengthen the wheel that conveys you through the journey of life. And I predict for you a rich and successful living.